Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I am your host, Jay Larson, and joining me is my long-lost brother, your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
So, given that time has no meaning in 2020, it feels like it's been about a decade or two since we've done an episode.
It feels like so long. I think
it was 2 weeks.
It's 2 weeks. But I feel like in some ways us recording the podcast is the only way I've been keeping track of time.
Yeah, right. So 2 weeks ago, we thought you were going to have to evacuate for hurricane, which, like, when I say that, that literally sounds like it happened a year ago.
Yeah, I barely remember that. But yeah, it's the hurricane completely missed Houston. We went to my mother-in-law's anyways just to be safe, but everything was fine. Nice. Louisiana got hit pretty rough, and that was really awful.
Yeah.
Actually, the park that I went kayaking and camping at did get hit really badly, and they won't share photos, so I'm worried the damage is really bad, and they still haven't shared photos. It's a Sea Rim State Park, so I'm glad I got to go before it was wiped off the map.
Well,
not even kidding. Like, that's how I feel. It's gone now. It's 2020, Jay. The worst case scenario will always happen.
It is 2020, and you are right, yeah.
But why else didn't we record, Jay? What else happened?
So, I had an emergency relaunch of the website that members of the Marvel Crisis Protocol community are likely familiar with. Sung Soo, who is a heck of a guy, he basically made the relaunch possible. And we started work on Friday morning and launched on Saturday evening. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's still a bunch of work to do, but it's roughly 1.2 million times better than the catastrophic state that the old website got to. So
it was taking a while to load sometimes, so that's good to know.
Yeah, fun fact. So one thing that a lot of customers had an issue with on the old site towards the end, they would get to the checkout page, they would input their credit card information, and like just a little spinny wheel would pop up and spin for eternity, and they couldn't place their order. But come to find out, the good news is that it appeared to be some sort of browser issue. And if you didn't use Chrome, you were likely fine. And so the good news is that almost no one uses Chrome. And that's a lie.
Everyone
uses Chrome. And that wasn't great. So, yeah, I was too slammed last week trying to be in emergency status to record. So my apologies. Real quick, I'll get some live feedback from you, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
So pull out your phone and go to discountgamesinc.com. And
okay.
I'm assuming you haven't been to the site today, and so you can give some feedback.
Ooh.
Instant reaction on the latest updates that we've had on the website.
It does look really nice. I can see, like, new products up there and, like, popular stuff. Nice. Magneto is popular.
Heck yeah.
Very cool. Oh, there's even your blog post at the bottom.
There are, yeah.
I like it. It looks really good. So you said Sung Soo helped you get this up?
Yes, he did.
That's awesome.
He did a ton of work for it. He's a fantastic dude. So
that's dope.
He's one of the people playing. I'm running a Call of Cthulhu campaign Sung Su's one of the players. So is lead designer for Atomic Mass Games, one Will Pagani. So it's been a fun group.
Sounds like some superstars in it too.
Yeah. The players have been a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I'm probably the weakest link as the game master. So tell me what else has been going on in your life?
My wife and I took we had my sister babysit, and we went mountain biking for the first time ever, and she fell and broke her wrist. So that was fun and surprising and very 2020 and on brand. But in more on purpose news, I've been able to get in 5 games with Web Warriors and 5 with Spider Foes, I think, as well. Most of them in person and a couple on Tabletop Simulator, because I've finally learned how to use it. And I did my first league game. I was supposed to do my second one today, but my children decided not to let that happen. So.
And what have been your thoughts on the Tabletop Simulator League so far?
It's clunky. It's emulating a system that is not really like made for computers. The only thing I like about it is like once you pick your crisis cards, you can push a button and it sets up the table for you. And that's the one thing that's better. Everything else is like a little bit awkward, a little bit chunky. But I feel like for a lot of people, it's their only way to play right now. Like, especially if you're immunocompromised, if your area just isn't able to have any stores open right now, or, you know, you just don't feel comfortable with it. So I do know there's a lot of like community going on with it. My feelings are like, I wish everybody could just go play the tabletop game and paint and do it that way. But it's fine. Like, it's fine. I like it. And I'm excited to play through this league because I'm basically just experimenting with my Spider Foe and Web Warrior lists. And it's interesting to see some of the other, you know, some of the things people are trying. Like, my first opponent played Web Warriors with Groot and Black Dwarf. And that was very interesting. I was like, oh, huh. And then I don't hate it, actually. I thought it could
that
be.
That is kind of interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, huh. So they get the defensive bonus, and then they're going to be able to, like, tank attacks and, you know, interfere with your opponents. And so it's like one of those things where I was like, this seems weird to me. And then I immediately was like, I want to try this list. So it's something like, I don't think any of my, hey Jay, are you still there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. My computer made us silly. But it's one of those things like I never would have thought of that. But now that I like had it thrown at me, I was like, ooh, okay. So I'm excited to give it more of a chance. I do think it adds like 10 to 20% like more time. So In person, I can usually play a game an hour with my locals when we, you know, get the chance to meet up. And this seems like it takes about an hour and a half or longer to play a game.
That makes sense. And I think that there's a place for these to coexist and be happy together, and so that's good. But like, there is also a part of me there's always the concern that that something might end up killing the in-person game, right?
And, yeah.
And it's good to, I guess, I'm kind of selfishly glad that they can kind of coexist and not one dominate the other.
So. Yeah, and I don't foresee that happening. It's just it can't compete with the real game. Like I don't play Crisis Protocol to go on my computer kind of stuff, and I don't feel like anything in Tabletop Simulator is really better than the actual game, except for that one like tiny setup thing I liked. And you know, like it, It's not a replacement. It's more of like a temporary fix, right? It's a nicotine patch. It's not a cigarette. I think if it wasn't for COVID, right, this would just be like a neat way I can play games with people in Britain, or, you know, like I could play Omnis far away, or you, but I really am just so in love with the actual, like, having my terrain on the table and speaking of my local painter Dursum finished my terrain set for me.
Oh, nice.
Because he used an airbrush, and so it's this synth wave pink to purple terrain, and it's gotten to the point where, like, every time I bust it out, someone's like, what is this, where do I buy this?
And I'm like, yeah. Nice.
It looks so cool. I'll post some photos on our Facebook for people to see later.
Nice. I also hear that you have been playing some PlayStation.
Oh yeah, I bought the Avengers game, which, if anybody's played Destiny, I do feel like the like core loop is a lot like Destiny, where you're leveling up and you're improving your skills and your characters and you're getting skins, and you're getting, like, you know, very small power upgrades and items. And so it's a really cool little game. I think, there's a lot of, like, I wish it had crossplay. I wish it had a little bit less, like, monetization of, like, they're definitely going to try to get infinite amount of money from players in the future. But I think it's a really fun game. And I beat the campaign in about 3 hours and got where it's just like, yeah, but it was really good. It's a very short, like, story campaign, and then you're basically multiplayer. Like, they want you to go play multiplayer with people.
Oh, interesting.
So, it's basically you have a squad of four, and each person is a different superhero. And, you know, it's fun. I've really been having just a lot of fun goofing around with it. The campaign, they make the main character Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan. And she's such a joy to, like, she's basically a superhero nerd who becomes an Avenger, and it's so sweet and endearing. And she's like, it's so well acted that I was just like, this is really good. Like, for such a short campaign, it's really nice. I really like how they did it. And then I'm excited to keep playing it past the campaign in story mode. And I'm also hoping, like, there'll be some more story additions later, because I think that's their setup, is that they're going to do, like, character upgrade. They're going to add a lot of characters. I think they've got, like, 12 or 15 characters in the pipeline, including Hawk Guy, and also Kate Bishop Hawk Guy. So that's going to be cool. But yeah, it's fun. It's definitely, like, a multiplayer brawler where you progress by getting, little upgrades and leveling up. But I like it a lot.
Nice. So this isn't related to really Crisis Protocol or Marvel or anything, but it's one of the, like, lone beams of joy in my life in 2020. And so I'm going to discuss it with you, Greg. Today was the day that the first Dune trailer dropped.
What did you think?
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So I had to watch it on my phone with my kids nearby because someone sent it to me. So I didn't get to give it my full attention, but it looked really cool.
It's so good.
It looks very, like, moody and beautiful. And I mean, from what we saw in the trailer, true to the book. So
yeah,
all looks great.
Well, doing, like, a race and gender swap on Liette, like, completely undermines the whole book, according to some neckbeard somewhere. But anyway, I do appreciate that 2020 is, like, just setting me up to be crushed by the fact that I can't watch this movie at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the things I've been most excited about in a really long time. And
yeah,
this is the same director that made Arrival and made Blade Runner 2049, and I love both those books. I think that that Blade Runner 2049 is just kind of a visually stunning masterpiece, and it feels like there is a lot of that going on in this movie as well. So I am the excites.
I'm with you on that. I'm also a huge fan of what they did with Blade Runner. I always forget, is it 2049? You just said it. But
yeah,
okay.
2049.
So I loved it. It was beautiful.
I thought it was better than the original, and that makes me a heretic, but whatever.
I think they're very different, and that's one of the things I loved about it, is I love a good sequel that is different from the first one. And, you know, these had enough time where they can be, like, really different and nobody will really care. But, you know, like, so in my opinion, some of the best movie sequels are Aliens, Gremlins 2 is, like, I think, one, like, I would put it up there. Just, I'm like, it's so different and it's great. It's so good. And I'll argue that it's not a great movie, but is it a great sequel? Yes. But I love that it's very different. And I'm really excited for Dune, because we need more of that, just like beauty, and the more people that, because I do still feel like Dune is relatively unknown.
Which is, yeah, it's probably true, but it's just like kind of crazy, right?
I agree. Because it's totally crazy.
It's, on the one hand, like I get it. It's really weird, right? It's a really weird book. And it's kind of funny. I've read Dune many, many times. The first time I read it, I was probably 10. And I'm sure that like a lot of the themes and the stuff going on in it were just like flying completely over my head, but it still was like just completely fascinating to me. And it's a little bit tough to say, because there isn't the best reporting on this with books, but it's probably the best selling science fiction book of all time. So it's kind of crazy that for that being the case, it's still relatively unknown, right? But I'm super excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I think the first, so I didn't read the book until college, but I remember watching the sci-fi miniseries as a teenager and just being like freaked out by some of the imagery, and it was so, you know, new and weird that it's one of those things that like it's just stuck in my head. I remember comparing a lot of the sci-fi classics I saw to it, just that miniseries. Mm. And then, you know, like, I read it 3 times through college, I think. And I kind of kept going back to it. But no, it's a classic. It establishes, like, so much of our science fiction that is really popular today. And, like, is it controversial to say, like, I think 40K stole a ton from it? That's not fair. Stole isn't fair, but, you know. I think it influenced 40K, and
it's kind of a foundational piece of work in science fiction, and has become a, it's kind of like, you know, would you say that War Machine stole from steampunk? No, not really. It's just, I don't know. It's almost like it's become a part of our culture, I guess, is what I was trying to say. So
nice. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's steel is not the right way to say it, because it is, especially not with fiction, right? Like, it's not the right framing, but it influenced so much, it's hard to say where some of these things came from.
It is, this is just a weird tangent, but it is kind of interesting to me how like there was the lead designer of Magic, I read a or listened to an interesting talk that he gave about designing Magic. And one of the things he talked about was them trying to use common tropes or parts of popular culture so that people feel connected to the setting right away. And so, you know, there's angels and vampires and dragons and all this stuff happening in magic, and people feel like an instant connection to it because it's what we're used to. So my phone is going crazy, or not my phone, my watch. All right. So while we were on hiatus, there was a bit of a tragedy that happened, where the death of the actor who had been playing the Black Panther in the MCU movies passed away, and it came as a pretty big shock to me. I didn't have any idea that he'd been sick, which evidently was the case with most people. One of the articles that we discussed recently with each other was that even most of his coworkers or the people who were cast members with him on shows were unaware that he was fighting cancer for 4 years. So I guess, Greg, to start off, what did you think or feel when you found out about that?
Oh, I was gutted. It was such a surprise. So it wasn't even, you know, like whenever a celebrity passes or someone that, you know, a lot of people know of them and know their work, but don't know them personally. It's always surprising, but Chadwick Boseman was so good at the role he took on. Mm-hmm. And he embodied it so well. And, you know, there's been so much news just about, like, less about, like, you know, his passing and more like, oh, little tidbits, you know? So we learned.
Yeah, it seemed like there's been, like, this tsunami of stories of him just being, like, a really decent person, right?
Yeah, like he was so while he had terminal cancer, he was visiting kids in the hospital who were fighting cancer, and like while he was you know, he apparently made a lot of suggestions for the Black Panther movie that ended up in it, and he's the one who like convinced them to let him use the accent, and like that Wakandans should have an accent, and it should be, they should, you know, do that. He's like, when they have the Dora Milaje with the spears, like, and the coronation and everything, he was saying, like, if they're just standing at attention, they're basically just Romans, right? Like, spears at attention, that's Romans. So he had all these little touches that made it into the final product. He's the one who suggested Killmonger want to be buried out at sea with all the slaves who jumped from the ships and things. Like, the Killmonger's death line was, you know, it's just these little touches, and it's very obvious that he had such a good feel for T'Challa and the character. I mean, not to mention, like, it feels like he had just gotten the media attention that an actor of his caliber deserves. And so, you know, it was a tragedy. He had such a huge effect. And so this is a little bit from something I've pointed out to a few people, is that most gamers are white, and growing up, all the superheroes are white. Mm-hmm. And so this doesn't really influence us, but I work with a lot of, you know, Black and brown kids as a teacher, and in Houston and in the schools I choose to work at, and Black Panther was a huge fucking deal. And
one of my favorite things after his death were the pictures I saw in Twitter of kids that were, a lot of times they were, you know, little Black or brown children who were dressed in their Black Panther costumes. Mm-hmm. And they were like paying respect to the Black Panther, or they were doing like a funeral for him, or they had the rest of their Marvel toys that were there, and they were the Black Panther, and it was just really cool to get to see them being able to have someone have represent them or someone they could relate to.
Yeah.
And it sucks that that's the person who passed away, but
yeah. And so representation matters, and like he did such a great job of being that, like, we expect perfection of people sometimes that are in the public limelight, and it's that pressure is even worse for people that feel like they're part of an underrepresented group. And he took that, like, role of being the Black Panther and the, and I hate to say it, right, like it's a shame that he is seen as like the main Black superhero in Marvel,
right.
And yes, he's not the first one. I of course I realize that, but he's the only one that had a movie. He's the leading man of, a movie, and it's so important that we, like, recognize that it's not just, like, tokenism, it's that we need to be more representative of, like, our, because Marvel is not an American company anymore by a long shot, right? It's an international company. Right. And if you look at, like, the movies that they were focusing on, they're way more diverse than the first few years of Marvel movies.
Yeah, and it feels like, so there were a lot of ways that it feels like Black Panther, the movie, was hopefully a turning point for Hollywood. It showed that it was nominated for Best Picture in the Academy Awards. It mm-hmm. showed that the superhero movies could be more than just a commercial success. They could hopefully be important cultural moments or works of art.
Yeah.
It also was just like a huge financial success for Disney. Mm. And, I think it's important for Hollywood to realize that that people want these type of stories. They want these types of movies. They want this type of representation. And, Disney wants to make money. And I think it's good for them to know that making movies like that is in their interest, and is in society's interest, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah. And I do think, looking at, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think a lot of the movies would not have gotten brought up if it wasn't for Black Panther's success. And I think a lot of that can be put at Chadwick Boseman's, that's him. If it wasn't for a good leading man, if it wasn't for people listening to the right voices, I don't know if, like, Marvel would have seen this success. But, like, in the future, we're getting Shang-Chi, we're getting Black Widow.
How long did it take them to do a Black Widow movie, right?
Well, they had to get rid of Ike Perlmutter first, and Kevin Feige had to fight Disney. Kevin Feige had to go directly to Disney to get Ike Perlmutter, like, under him so that they could do this. Because Ike Perlmutter was the one who said, Black people all look the same, which is why he replaced Terrence Howard with Don Cheadle in between Iron Man 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And he said, like, nobody buys women action figures, and which is why, like, we couldn't get any female-led projects. We couldn't get Black Panther. Like, Black Panther wouldn't have existed if Ike Perlmutter had his way, because and the crazy thing to me, just going about this, is that, like, Ike Perlmutter and his people have admitted that he wouldn't put Black or women or, anyone in charge, because they've said he doesn't seek, he's not basing it on race, he's basing it on what makes money. So it's like, okay, guess what? You're wrong. It makes money.
Yeah, it made a lot of money.
You never tried. Yeah. But I'm like, because of that success, Marvel was able to say, okay, let's make a Chinese character. Let's bring in Blade. Like, Blade is in the works, right? Like, I was so surprised that they're going to be putting Blade into the MCU, but I'm so excited. We're getting the Scarlet Witch TV show. It's just, I feel like Black Panther's success was what allowed Kevin Feige to show, yes, it's going to make money. Like, nobody should question having diverse superhero projects. And, you know, as a comic nerd, like, it was just so great to see someone so, like, wonderfully representing that character. And it's just, it's been really hard. And like, I don't know if you noticed, but in his public appearances in the last year, he's been really thin. Yeah. And there were, you know, internet jokes about it. And yeah. my thought when I saw that was, oh shit, I hope he's not sick. And I, you know, I just didn't think of it after that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, some of the, given the nature of humanity, some of the comments that were made from those pictures were like just as awful as you would expect, because the internet is the worst.
Yeah.
So. Why don't we pause there, and in the bonus episode, I think that it'll be a good, we'll continue talking about this, but some of the things that were on my mind were, we could discuss some of the other movies that he's been in. Also, I think it'll be interesting to reexamine Black Panther in Crisis Protocol after we've had a chance to play. He was one of the early characters that we talked about on the show, and, you know, talking about how our views on him may have evolved, if they have, I think will be interesting. So stay tuned for that.
Jay, I have one more thing to say.
Okay. Later.
It's more of an announcement. Just Comixology is a comic app, kind of like Marvel Unlimited. Actually, really similar. I think they have the same backbone program. Almost all Black Panther comics are free to read right now if you use that app. So if you don't have Marvel Unlimited yet, please go check out the comic that Jay and I started with. It's the Black Panther arc, written by, Jay, can you say his name for me? I always butcher it. Ta-Nehisi Coates. Thank you. But that Black Panther arc is incredible, and it's a to me, as like a comic nerd, going back and rereading that is the way I like kind of handled some of my emotions about his passing. And they're all free on Comixology. I don't know how long it'll last, but like, check it out, please.
Nice. So let's go ahead and move on. We promised that we were going to talk about Into the Spider-Verse, and it is time. So it does feel a little weird to transition from talking about as something as awful as this passing, and then transitioning into something, talking about something that is like just so unabashedly awesome. But here we are. So Into the Spider-Verse, we both, as people who are not just like the worst citizens of the universe, at least I hope not, we love this show. I assume that people who don't like, I don't want to speculate what might be wrong with them, but I feel sad for them. I assume that like their ability to feel joy is broken.
You know, Jay, I'm gonna bring up just the weirdest thing about this movie.
Okay.
It is the lowest grossing Spider-Man movie yet.
I mean, that's not surprising, right?
Because it's a cartoon. And yeah. Like, I think some people wrote it off. They were like, oh, it's a Spider-Man cartoon. Well, I'm not going to watch it.
And if you compare it to, like, the Spider-Man reboots with Andrew Garfield, like, I didn't necessarily think they were bad, per se. I think they still made tons of money. But the biggest issue is that it just felt like I would watch it and I'd be like, man, it feels like I've seen this story about 25 times at this point. And I think that one of the things that I appreciate the most, maybe not the most, one of the things that I appreciate a lot about this movie is that it's a fresh take on something that's very familiar. And it even like kind of makes fun of itself with the, like, the parts where it's like, okay, here's my backstory again, real quick, and yeah. making fun of that is just perfect.
Yeah, also true. It's a very self-aware movie.
Yes.
Like the jokes where Peter Parker does the dances and the kisses, like it has all these homages to the right. old movies. Mostly the Sam Raimi trilogy, right?
Right. Yeah.
But
it seems like I'm remembering like this it referencing like the subway or
the subway
the train
the kiss. Scenes.
Yes.
The evil Peter Parker dance scene where he's like, I'm sexy now and confident because I have the Venom symbiote. I don't know. Like he does that. And then it does like the popsicle. Like it's just a photo of the actual Spider-Man popsicle.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, right. The Christmas album is the one thing I think they just made up. Everything else is real.
Go ahead.
No, go.
It was also interesting, like, I'll also say that it was nice to be introduced to, like, a bunch of characters that I wasn't really that familiar with. So, for example, I'd never read any Miles Morales comics up to this point. Mm-hmm. Didn't really know much about Spider-Gwen. Whether it was Spider-Ham, is that his name?
It's Spider-Ham, yeah.
Okay, Spider-Ham, like the dark and black and white noir Spider-Man, or the like the anime Spider-Man. I don't know how many of those are like actual things in comics.
They all have their own comics. It just so Penny Parker, the anime one, and Spider-Gwen were specifically created for a Spider-Verse comic crossover.
Okay.
Spider-Man Noir was created because they did a bunch of these noir retellings of superheroes.
Okay.
So he had his own mini arc.
Okay.
Miles Morales is from the Ultimate Universe, basically. And then who am I missing? Oh, and Spider-Ham is... oh dear, where was he created? I think he was created as just a joke. Like they were just like, haha, wouldn't it be funny if they had an animal superhero world? So he's from like the 80s or the 70s.
Okay. One of the other things that I appreciate a lot about this movie, and this kind of ties into what we just finished talking about with Black Panther, is just like how diverse the feel of the movie is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like tokenism. It feels like it's, you know, you're experiencing the actual culture of these people. And that's something that I appreciate as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a really cool interview I listened to, like 4 weeks ago when I was getting ready for this. And, but it was about like, why did they make Miles Morales in the Ultimate Universe? And so basically, quick summary, the Ultimate Universe was created to be like a more realistic Marvel Universe, and there were a lot of like differing tones in it. Like there were some writers who were very like gritty and like they were like, oh, I'm gonna make Captain America call someone a fag or something, and it's like, well, that's really dated and shitty now. But the good writers were creating basically like the MCU. So the Ultimate Universe became the MCU, and Brian Michael Bendis created Miles Morales after Ultimate Spider-Man had been like, I think it had been like 150 issues, and it was Marvel's best-selling comic at most times. And they basically reached this point where they were like, we can't keep making these good stories if Peter Parker is the main character. So they like kind of looked at it again and they were like, well, we've proven what we can do. And they had this idea originally where if you were going to have a superhero from Queens, he shouldn't be a white kid. right? He wouldn't be it. Like, if it's going to be realistic, it should be a black or a brown kid. And so they came up with Miles Morales to continue the Spider-Man stories with a fresh face. And it's to them, it was more representative. And it became, you know, like, I remember I was working in comic shops when people were like, oh, they replaced Spider-Man with, like, or Spider-Man's black now. And it's like, no, Miles Morales is half black, half Puerto Rican, and he's his own character. And it's funny, I heard the same things when Into the Spider-Verse came out. And I was just like, it's a different character. It's not like they didn't just ray gun Peter Parker into a different character. But like, Miles Morales is the retelling of Peter Parker in order to make it more realistic with Queens. And like, I think he's a way more realistic character than Peter Parker, right? Peter Parker is a science genius who gets superpowers. It's less believable than like a kid who's struggling and whose parents are working class, and you know, he's a way more believable teenager, right? Okay, back on Spider-Verse though. Like, it is, there are so many just incredible little details, Jay, about like about it. When they show the little backstories, they put the original creators' names on the comic covers. So like, Penny Parker is actually created by Gerard Way, and like, I heard someone go like, Gerard Way, what the hell? So that's cool. Gerard Way? Yeah, Gerard Way. Do you know Gerard Way?
From? I don't think I do, no.
He is the lead vocalist from My Chemical Romance, and he also wrote Umbrella Academy. He actually went to school for comics, and then it just, that didn't work out, and after he became famous in My Chemical Romance, he started being able to get comic book work, and then that proved successful, so he's doing both, which is pretty cool. So that's me going on a tangent. Say more good things, Jay.
Okay, last thing in this episode, and then we'll continue gushing about the show in the next one. So I thought someone had said in the, I guess, explain to me the family, his family relationship with his parents.
In
the movie.
In the movie. So his mom is like their ethnicity or what?
And one of the things I had been told, and I guess I don't know if this is true or not, but that in the movie, it's the father is actually his stepdad, or is that actually his biological father?
It's in the movies, that's his biological father.
Okay.
I don't think they actually did a stepdad for him. There's a confusing. Okay, so there are currently three versions of Miles Morales. I think there's the video game one, there's the movie, and then there's the comic book, and they're all confusing. But it's that Miles's last name is Morales, and his dad's last name is Davis.
Right.
For whatever reason, Miles does not have his father's last name. That might be where the confusion is. I don't think Miles ever has a stepfather, because as far as I know, his dad is always alive, except in one version. So I'm pretty sure it's just that Jefferson, because it's
okay. Here's I have a potential answer after some extensive internet research just now.
I'm just confused where this is coming from. Sorry.
So, listen, don't question. Okay, so here is one potential explanation. This says, as for not picking his father's last name, a possible explanation is given in the Miles Morales novel by Jason Reynolds. Miles shrugged. Back in the day, my pops and my uncle did enough dirt in their lives to make Davis a bad word in some circles. I look just like them, both them both and live in the same neighborhood, so I don't know. I wonder. And so basically, he thinks that they had him go by his mother's name because of his father's criminal past.
Yeah, maybe.
So
I mean, maybe. It could also be. Yeah, I don't.
Anyways, I had someone tell me that they thought that in the movie that was his stepfather, and mm-hmm. that was why he had the different surname or whatever, right?
Yeah. No, it's I don't know why, but yeah, that's it's I've never thought about it. I did notice it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
His dad is named Jefferson Davis.
Yes.
Can we talk about how weird that is for a black man to be named Jefferson Davis?
No, we can probably wrap it up there.
That's fair. I've gone on enough tangents for one night.
All right. Well, our next episode we are going to be focusing on Miles Morales. Can you tell people what they should be reading, Greg?
Yeah, you should be reading. I already read it and more. But you should read Ultimate Comics Spider-Man issues number 1 through 6. That's going to give you a lot of really cool. It's basically his beginning. And just to be clear, it's called Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. And you have to pick the one because there are two different ones. So it's from 2011, but it's the one with Miles Morales' costume on the cover. So it's Ultimate Comics Spider-Man from 2011. And we're going to read the first 6 issues. It's basically going to give us the beginning of Miles Morales. It's awesome.
Yeah, I have. I've read significantly past where I expected to in that series. And it's been an enjoyable read, and it will be interesting to, I guess, kind of compare and contrast the arc in this movie a little bit. Mm-hmm. All right, so Greg, can you also tell everyone why they should subscribe to our Patreon?
Yeah, so if you subscribe to our Patreon, not only do you gain access to our bonus episodes every week, but you also get access to next week's episode and the bonus episode. So if you subscribe right now, you will get the bonus episode we're about to record and the next week's episode early. As well, you can gain access to our Discord channel, where you can get special insight into Greg's random meandering thoughts, Jay criticizing me via text, and all of our other fun subscribers. It's a lot of fun, actually. You guys should join. It's the best.
One positive note about our subscription levels on the podcast is that they are, it is a per episode subscription. And so if life gets crazy and we miss an episode, you don't get charged for it. It's not a monthly charge. And so check that out and give it a listen.
Yeah, please do. We really appreciate it.